Your conference is being recorded.
Hi, this is James Valentine, an attorney with Hyman Phelps & McNamara in Washington, D.C., and I'm interviewing Christine McSherry, the founder, president, and executive director of the JET Foundation, for Fidley's Update magazine. Christine has been a patient advocate for Duchenne muscular dystrophy patients and families for 16 years. Her work surrounding the FDA approval of Exondys 51 for Duchenne just last year has been cited by regulatory experts as a model for collecting and providing the experiences of patients and their caregivers to regulators like the FDA. We are lucky to have Christine with us today to share her experiences and to discuss with us the future of patient engagement. To start, Christine, can you just give us a quick rundown of the JET Foundation?
Sure, and thank you, James, for having me on today. JET Foundation was started in 2001 when my five-year-old son was diagnosed with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Duchenne muscular dystrophy is a rare fatal progressive genetic disorder that is caused by the absence of dystrophin, a protein needed in healthy muscle, due to a mutation on the dystrophin gene. Usually, patients lose the ability to walk by 12 and succumb to the disease in their early to mid-20s. As an organization, we've grown dramatically over the 15 years, but more specifically, in the last 4 years, as we engaged in conversations with FDA around Exondys, eteplirsen, and how it affects patients.
Thank you. Can you tell us why the JET Foundation became engaged with FDA, and also how your engagement with the agency led you down the path that it did?
Sure. The organization began hearing accounts from patients and families involved in Sarepta's clinical trial of eteplirsen that patients were showing small signs of improvement early in the clinical trial. So we began engaging with FDA to discuss this.
And so what types of information did FDA ask you about?
They asked us to collect videos of the boys doing activities of daily living that were abnormal for patients of that age with Duchenne. So we did. We went out and we took as many videos as we could of kids doing the things that they couldn't do before or doing the things that the natural history of Duchenne said that they couldn't be able to do. We brought those videos back to the agency. And while they were impressed by the videos, they asked if we could collect something more measurable or rigorous.
So they asked you to come back with more quantitative data to evaluate those anecdotal accounts of patients. What was your strategy?
We had to identify outcomes that were important to the parents of the kids with Duchenne to develop the quantitative rating scales and interview questions to be used during interviews with the boys and their parents. The questions covered motor functions, activities of daily living, like going to the refrigerator and pouring a cup of milk, or getting out of the pool independently, getting in and out of a van, and quality of life, things like volleyball, things that kids like to do.
Great. And once you finished collecting that information, how did you convey that to FDA and ultimately the advisory committee members? And what were your goals for how that information about patient experiences would be used by FDA?
Sure. So interestingly enough, we found that the patients on eteplirsen were experiencing stabilization, slow decline, and small improvements in activities of daily living that were most important to them. For example, one patient, the fact that he no longer needed to use a wheelchair in school was important to him. For another patient, the fact that he was able to continue playing volleyball was a quality of life improvement that allowed him to be more social and have more friends in school. The patients didn't necessarily have the same or similar results, but they all gained back activities important to them that they had lost prior to starting therapy. After collecting the quantitative data and quantifying this patient experience data, which because the project was started only after the trial had started, was unanchored, we created a report to take back to FDA and present. We never intended for the information to be used at the advisory committee, We only intended for the data to bring more context to FDA's review of the data, and we were thrilled when they agreed to incorporate this as part of their review.
Great. Thank you for sharing your experiences, and congratulations. To the best of our knowledge, it was the first time a patient advocate has presented during the core presentation at an advisory committee meeting. So that is, rather than being relegated to the open public hearing, a patient was actually invited to participate during the sponsor's presentation earlier in the day.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, exactly.
So as we know. Oh, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
We do believe it was a special case, and we requested to have this data presented during the core presentation, and it was granted.
Great, thank you. And as we know, Exondys 51, or Teplizumab, was ultimately approved in September of 2016 under the accelerated approval pathway. Regulatory experts have speculated that the Jet Foundation's highlighting of that unexpected maintenance and even some increase in the ability of the Duchenne patients to participate in certain activities of daily living helped show the FDA finding on dystrophin produced by the drug was reasonably likely to predict clinical benefit, which is part of the regulatory standard for approval under the accelerated approval pathway. However, despite FDA requesting the information from you, the Jet Foundation, the patient-developed report of patient experiences was not addressed in FDA's approval documents. So that leads me to the next part of our interview. Now, under the 21st Century Cures Act, signed into law on December 16, 2016, FDA is going to be required under Section 3001 to make public a brief statement regarding the patient experience data and related information submitted and reviewed as part of a new drug application. So, Christine, how do you think this provision will change the landscape for other patient organizations trying to provide information to FDA?
Great question. Because it will require FDA to be transparent about how they use the information provided. I think it will ensure that the agency will actually take into account the patient perspective. And at the very least, it gives the public a way to evaluate FDA's use of patient input and whether or not they're actually using it.
Great. And do you see a role moving forward for patient-centered, patient-reported accounts of their experiences on investigational drugs, similar to the types of information that you described to us that you gathered?
Yeah, I think we will see more and more patient groups bringing this type of patient experience data to the FDA, especially in rare disease space where there's less data to evaluate and more unknowns when it comes down to endpoints that are clinically meaningful. I think it's also important to garner input from patients on what is most important to them, what questions are important to be answered when designing a clinical trial, and do the endpoints being studied have an impact on the daily lives of patients?
And were there any lessons learned or things that you would do differently on this type of project in the future?
Yeah, I would have started this project before the start of the study in order to collect data that would be more rigorous and gain a better understanding of what stabilization or improvement look like while on drug. If companies partner with patient organizations ahead of time to collect this data retrospectively, it would have been data and ultimately it would have carried more weight with regulators and even with payers post-approval.
Great. Hopefully that's something that other patient organizations and sponsors will think about as they're gearing up to design their clinical studies. So under Section 3003 of the 21st Century Cures Act, FDA is required to issue a series of guidance documents on methodologies for collecting patient experience data, as well as how it will utilize that information. What are you looking for from FDA and how it shapes the field of patient engagement?
So I think that patient-reported outcome data and projects, patient-centered information, the use of benefit risk surveys, and the use of patients as consultants to FDA to the review divisions All of that type of stuff, including externally led PFDD meetings, are certainly going to help shape the way that FDA continues to have that conversation with advocacy groups and with industry members. It's interesting because I think that oncology has a really great example of how everybody engages together. And I think the one place that we could add in there a little bit is these patient-reported outcome measures. It's really hard in Duchenne, and many other rare diseases. If you're trying to measure a clinical endpoint that's going to take 4 or 5 years, and you're looking at children who have a limited lifetime, you can't wait 4 or 5 years to see the benefit to the patient. And some of the benefits to the patients are just so subtle. And so really working collectively and together to determine what those subtleties are, and then putting good anchors and rigor around how we collect them, that's something that is going to be very valuable to FDA, to drug companies, and to our patient rare disease patient communities in moving forward. It's really hard to see or to imagine that good drugs that can potentially extend people's lives, like they did back in the late 80s, early 1990s with AIDS, don't make it to market because the clinical endpoints are either too far out or the bar is just too high. And again, looking at surrogate markers, you know, as being predictive of a clinical benefit is so important. And so I think patients and families can help identify the surrogate markers ahead of time. So it's an opportunity for FDA to include the patient-reported outcomes into their review when they are considering products that treat rare diseases. And as I said, where the data is often difficult to interpret, or it's just too far out, or the bar is really high. It's an opportunity for FDA to engage patients early. Like I said before, determine risk benefit and benefit, use benefit risk surveys, to understand what benefits and what risk patients are willing to take. And again, using patients as consultants for review divisions. So review divisions really have a better understanding of what the disease is and the disease community is. And of course, as we've heard a lot about, the external led PFDD meetings. And all of these are important, easy ways for FDA to gather the information from the community and give the patient groups choices on how they want to engage with FDA. And just to mention, so another Duchenne patient organization such as PPMD, they created a benefit risk survey that I talked about. And that the goal of that is to try to understand what's important to the Duchenne community, and again, what risks we're willing to tolerate for a potential benefit.
Thank you. Certainly hear you loud and clear to have lots of options for gathering information and experiences from patients. That would be important for FDA to ensure that a variety of methods are accounted for in their guidance that they'll be coming out with. And certainly the Duchenne patient community has really created a lot of great models and examples for them to look to as they start to put pen to paper. So the Cures Act does not address patient engagement with industry, which you've mentioned a few times now. What advice do you have for companies developing medical products that might be thinking about engaging with patients and patient organizations like yours?
Yeah, so just as I think that industry partners should start communicating early and very often with patient organizations. And that's what the organizations are really there for, right? They are your kind of clearinghouse for the patient's voice. And you should be involving those organizations in the beginning and giving them a seat at the table call design. Don't just have them come in when something goes wrong, but really start engaging at the beginning. And oftentimes they can lend advice that is very helpful in that protocol design part of it. And then again, through the rest of the drug development pipeline. Or drug development timeline to help guide you within that disease community.
Thank you. And I'd like to close by asking, what else should we know about the world of FDA regulation that's important to the JET Foundation?
So while the JET Foundation, our priority has been Duchenne and has been for the last 15 years, we've really grown to recognize over the last 4 years through our process with FDA, our conversations with other rare disease communities, that we need to think broader, and we need to think about all of the rare diseases that are out there. And so I think that there's an opportunity here to talk about targeted therapies for rare diseases, the provision of the 21st Century Cures Act, and the chance for products for follow-on exons, and we're seeing, you know, exon skipping therapy not just in Duchenne, but coming into other rare disease spaces. And so there's a chance here to receive expedited review and approval and development. Precision medicine is the future, and developing technologies that can be used across a broad array of genetic variations of diseases can help a large number of patients in a shorter period of time. And again, I think we're talking not just about Duchenne, but a broader spectrum of rare genetic diseases. And those that can really be affected by precision and personalized medicine. The FDA needs to use the authorities granted to them as part of the 21st Century Cures Act and the Targeted Therapies for the Rare Disease Act to expedite development of safe and potentially efficacious drugs that treat rare diseases. And the agency needs to use these authorities bilaterally across all centers and divisions.
Thank you, Christine. That certainly will be an important area and an opportunity for sponsors to utilize the information that they've already provided FDA, and hopefully have FDA expedite, you know, the follow-on or platform, build on a existing platform to expedite it for the follow-on subtypes, or in the case of Duchenne, exons. So thank you, and that concludes our interview. To find out more about the JET Foundation, you can go to jetfoundation.org. That's J-E-T-T foundation.org, and you can listen to this podcast on the Fidley website. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jen.